Chapter 6, Setting Standards. Numbers have gotten a bad reputation in some quarters. No surprise when you look at how they've been used. Most companies use them as punishment, as tools to supervise, intimidate, control. They don't use numbers as tools to build, to teach people to be more productive. The payoff comes from getting the people who create the numbers to understand the numbers. When that happens, the communication between the bottom and the top of the organization is just phenomenal. You can't generate that quality of communication just by dumping numbers on people, however. You have to make the numbers both comprehensible and interesting. You have to bring them alive. After all, it is possible to quantify almost any aspect of business. Inventory turnover, sales per employee, job safety, mailing costs, labor efficiency, productivity, telephone time per customer, energy consumption, and on and on. The trick is to be able to evaluate those numbers, to make sense out of them, to know what to do with them. For that, you need standards. A standard is the number to shoot for in any particular category you are measuring. It may be a ratio. It may be a percentage. It may be an absolute number over a period of time. All that depends on the category. If you're measuring safety, you'll probably look at frequency and severity of accidents. If you're monitoring how fast customers are paying their bills, it will be average days outstanding, the average number of days that receivables go unpaid. Whatever the category, you need a number against which you can compare your results and thereby determine how you're doing. The number is the standard, the level you can reach if you apply yourself and do a good job. It is the benchmark. I actually prefer the word target over benchmark because it reinforces the point that these are not fixed, immutable goals. They are part of an ongoing contest of people against the realities of the marketplace. Standards are tools for challenging you to perform up to your abilities. As such, they can be revised as you get better or as circumstances change. Some standards are obviously more important than others, if only because some categories are going to have a bigger impact on your ability to make money and generate cash. To a large extent, that is a function of the business you are in. In a manufacturing operation like ours, for example, it is essential to have standards for labor efficiency and overhead absorption, because labor and overhead are critical in our ability to earn a profit. If you have a chain of clothing stores, on the other hand, you'd be more interested in having standards for, say, sales per square foot, inventory turnover, to determine how well you're using people and your cash. A consulting company or professional services, by contrast, would tend to emphasize billable hours. A hotel might focus on its occupancy rate. Within a particular company, moreover, people with different functions need standards that are tailored to their specific jobs and reflect the factors over which they personally have control. Rick Hedden, who ran the warehouse, may have been curious to know how the company's current quality compared to past performances and general industry standards, but he was more concerned about meeting his own standards for inventory accuracy and turns. Similarly, the salespeople are going to want standards for things like gross margins and selling expenses as a percent of sales, while the purchasers will be more interested in material costs. The number and variety of standards will vary from person to person and job to job. But everyone in the company needs some way of measuring how he or she is doing on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. There is almost no limit to the number of standards you can come up with. Each individual can develop standards of his or her own. Anyone who really gets into the great game of business will compile a substantial list over time. But don't overdo it in the beginning. You can start playing the game with a couple of standards, say one related to sales and another to productivity, and build from there. The whole idea is to throw a spotlight on some part of the action. Standards make the game faster and more fun. They allow you to determine easily and quickly how you're contributing to the process of making money and generating cash. For the open book manager, standards are an essential means of making business understandable and manageable, of getting people over the fear of numbers and accustomed to taking control of the results. Numbers like these are no more complicated and need to be no more intimidating than the calculations millions of baseball fans do whenever they want to figure out their favorite hitter's batting average or their favorite pitcher's earned run average. In business, however, people don't do the calculations because they don't understand the rules. Standards help you teach them. They allow you to show people the equivalent in your business of batting 400 or hitting 60 home runs in a season or getting a hit in 56 consecutive games or having an ERA of less than one. And while you're educating people with standards, you're also giving them goals to shoot for. You're challenging them to see what they can do. You're getting them into the game. Numbers make the team. Most important, numbers like these help everyone play the same game. People need to have some way of keeping score. If you don't provide one, they'll make one up on their own. At Harvester, I noticed how an experienced foreman would do his own little income statement. He'd get to the factory early, walk the floor, count his stock, see where his machines were. Then he'd stand by the time clock and count the people coming in. After which, he'd go back and set up an ad hoc income statement. I think most people come up with their own rough accounting systems that they use to get themselves organized to figure out their priorities. The problem is the systems may lead them in different directions. That's why it's important to provide a set of standards everybody can use to keep track of what's happening. Then they all know when something goes wrong, and they all see what they can do about it. So how should you go about developing and implementing standards at your company? By choosing a category, picking a target, and going after it. Pretty much a target will do, as long as you can explain why it's worth aiming for. There's no single correct path to follow. Be guided by your own instincts, the specifics of your business, and whatever seems to work best. Come up with a number that seems reasonable. Don't worry about being precise. People can argue with it if they think it's wrong. Setting standards is a team effort and an ongoing process. Encourage people to debate each one. Let them negotiate. Over time, you'll get it right. Just start, stick with it, and learn from your mistakes. That said, here are some tips about setting and using standards from someone who's already made just about every mistake there is. Tip number one, do you know your critical number? Every company has one. It is the number that at any given time is going to have the biggest impact on what you're doing and where you want it to go. Exactly what it is will depend on a variety of factors. The kind of business you're in, the state of the economy, competitive conditions, your specific financial situation, and so on. Your critical number may have to do with sales, or cash flow, or quality, or recruitment, or operating costs, or a dozen other factors. Whether you're aware of it or not, it will make or break your company. It is the number you have to do well on if you're going to succeed, or maybe even survive. So it's vital that you identify it and come up with standards people can use to go after it. The good news is that it's generally pretty easy to track down your critical number. Assuming you know your business reasonably well, pay attention to what keeps you up at night. Better yet, ask your people what keeps them up at night. If you're in the pit of a recession, all of you no doubt lie in bed worrying about sales. That's probably where you'll find your critical number. Or suppose you have a temporary service company and your business is going gangbusters. Then the number is more likely to involve, say, finding and keeping good employees. Or something may have happened to your company that makes one area of the operation particularly important. Tip number two, build a standard cost system. Sooner or later, your critical number will have to do with costs. And by then, you better have a standard cost system in place. It's the only way of making sure that your costs are in line with the marketplace, that they aren't so high as to undermine your ability to compete. Remember, you can only make money in business by being the least cost producer or by having something nobody else has. And even in the second case, you'd be foolish not to keep your costs down. To do that effectively, you must have a standard cost system that tells you what your costs should be in every aspect of your organization. Without it, you're going to have a hard time getting your people involved in controlling costs, mainly because they won't know what to do. In fact, they probably won't believe you if you tell them the company costs are too high, and you'll find it almost impossible to teach them how to follow the basic rules of business, make money, and generate cash. All this takes time and effort, but it is not nearly as difficult or as mysterious as some people imagine. Even in business that are less standardized than ours, a graphic design company, for example, or a publishing house or a consulting company, you're still dealing with things to which costs can and must be attached. No two advertising campaigns may be exactly alike, but you create them out of the same components, and each of those components costs money. When you get right down to it, business is all about taking limited resources, time, talent, materials, energy, whatever, and turning them into products and services that customers want to buy. In any business, you can avoid a lot of trouble by knowing in advance what you can afford to pay for those resources and still earn a profit. That's the whole idea behind developing a standard cost system. You simply go through your company and figure out what all those costs should be. It has nothing to do with standardizing products. It has everything to do with being able to say to your people with certainty, look, we got to operate at this level or we don't have jobs. Tip number three, look for the reality behind the numbers. More than work, it takes creativity and imagination to develop good standards. There is a whole art to quantifying things, and it's one that's worth learning because the more quantifiable something is, the more you can do with it. But before you can be an effective quantifier, you have to develop an eye for the reality behind the numbers. You have to learn how to recognize what the numbers really represent, what sort of behavior produces the numbers, and what people can do differently to change the numbers. The best kind of standard is one that makes so much sense to people, it becomes second nature. It remains constantly in their consciousness. It is something they talk about in their normal, everyday conversation to explain how their work is going. Again, I like to use the baseball analogy. A batting average is an abstraction, but no one who plays the game has to think twice about what it means. If you're batting less than 100, you know you're in a slump. If your average is over 400, you know you're on a tear. You can use your average to measure how you're doing and to help yourself figure out whether or not you need to do anything differently. How we calculate our batting average. Every business should have its own counterparts to the batting average. We have several. One of the best is the overhead absorption rate. This is the number people use on the shop floor to determine how much overhead they cover or absorb when they're spending time working on prime, that is, working on products, as opposed to taking breaks, cleaning up work areas, attending meetings, and so on. We calculate the absorption rate every year by adding up all the budgeted overhead costs and dividing by the number of prime hours required to meet our production goals. That tells us what we have to spend per hour on overhead to carry out our annual plan. When I talk to executives from other companies, they find this hard to swallow. They can't believe that our hourly people know or care what they are doing to cover our overhead. I tell them to come and visit us in Springfield and walk around our shop floor. Everybody understands the overhead absorption rate. Why? Because it gives us a standard for determining quickly and easily if we are doing all we can to maximize our profits and earn our bonuses. We just multiply the absorption rate by the number of hours actually worked on prime, and we can see whether or not our production is high enough to cover our overhead expenses. That is, how much overhead have we absorbed? If we don't absorb all the overhead we have budgeted, we have to pay the difference out of profits, and that cuts into our bonuses, not to mention the value of our stock. Obviously, people at SRC care about the overhead absorption because of the way we set up the game. But that's one of the benefits to having standards. A standard is useless if people don't care about it. The better the standards you develop, the more creative you will be in getting people to care. Tip number four, find sources that can help you develop standards. No matter what business you're in, there are benchmarks and standards, and the chances are that someone has already calculated them. You can usually find them out by digging around. Suppose you have to buy workers' compensation insurance for a new business. You need a way of measuring safety. Well, the federal government has developed formulas for measuring safety, and the insurance companies use these formulas to set premiums. You can use the formulas as well to monitor your own safety, to establish your own benchmarks. The better you do, the lower your insurance costs. Then you can use that to educate your people about their impact on overhead, to show them how they reduce overhead by improving safety. Developing standards is an ongoing process of education. Never stop investigating what kinds of standards you should have and what the target numbers should be. In the early days, we brought in suppliers to teach courses at the plant. Who knows more about the installation of bearings than the people who make them? In the course of teaching, they help you develop more standards and benchmarks. The sessions also reduce tensions with suppliers. You avoid the typical us versus them mentality. That's a big bonus. Your suppliers are your partners. You should treat them as your partners. You need standards to show people the real world. You can't just go out there with wishes and goals. You need to give people a strategy to get there. You need to guide them. You have to show them the goal is attainable, and here's how they can attain it. Unless you run into a situation that defies mathematics, then you're going for a miracle. And sometimes people can produce miracles, but it helps if they're well-educated. Tip number 5, tell the stories behind the numbers. Once you've developed some standards, what do you do with them? How do you use them? More important, how do you get other people to use them? How do you demystify the numbers? How do you turn them into tools that people can use, that they want to use, to contribute more? In short, how do you educate people around the standards? I have always found that the most effective way to do that is by telling stories. With standards, we can use the numbers to tell stories about what is happening in the company and what we can do to change. We can bring problems out in the open where they can be addressed, where they have to be addressed. Once people understand a standard, they expect us to do something when we aren't meeting it. They know that if we don't, we won't make money, or we may run out of cash, which would be a story in its own right. Indeed, there are stories behind every number in the financial statements. Stories of opportunities missed, unforeseen problems, mysteries unraveled. All of life's perfections and imperfections. Our weekly staff meetings are filled with these stories, which we tell to each other and then pass along to everybody else in the follow-up meetings we hold throughout the company. It's a way of animating the numbers, bringing them to life. When you use the numbers to tell stories, you can educate people without threatening or intimidating them. You can show where the numbers come from and what they mean. You can illustrate in a way people understand that they do make a difference, that they do control their own destiny. It's their game. Tip number 6, look for the profit in problems. Whenever you turn a loser into a winner, you get a double bang for your buck. Say you have a problem that's costing you $500,000 a year, and you figure out a solution that winds up earning you $500,000. You don't have a $500,000 winner, you have a $1 million winner. When you can stop the bleeding and turn it into healing, you're twice as well off as before. The financial system shows you where you can make money just by telling you where you're losing it. Take the plant that was running $45,000 below its standard for overhead absorption. We knew we were running at about $20 per man hour in that plant. In effect, they were losing 2,250 hours a month. One person worked about 173 hours a month. So we had 13 people that we had to worry about. We needed to find 13 people on the bottom and get them working up to a standard. Once we did that, we got more than $45,000 because other people started improving their performance as well. That's the 7th higher law. When you raise the bottom, the top rises. You really want people to solve their own problems. If the problem gets bad enough, you can always go in and tell people what to do. But all you'll get is the routine. You won't get any creativity. So you hope you don't have to get to that point. It's much better to have an environment in which people can come up with solutions themselves. Standards are tools for finding solutions. Leading with standards. Numbers are a critical tool for the CEO. I can see trends emerging before they become crises. That allows me to take action while things are still going good. I don't mean I tell people what to do. I mean I point out to them that a problem could be developing, giving them the opportunity to head it off. The numbers serve as a guide for me. Let's say one of our factories is having trouble with productivity. I can hold off, give the managers then a chance to come up with their own solution. I generally won't step in until a number begins to establish a pattern, say when the same problem turns up for 3 consecutive months. Then I have to act to make sure that the situation doesn't get out of hand and threaten everybody else in the company. But the nice thing about the financials is that they allow you to develop these trends. it doesn't bother me to see that we have problems. The more important is whether people are working toward solutions. We're always going to have problems. The question is, what are we doing to fix the problems? In business, you watch the numbers, and the numbers establish a pattern. As a CEO, you want to see those patterns. You want to master them. The benchmarks tells you where you are in a particular pattern. You get to the point where you can sense when something is wrong. It comes from having routines, from seeing the patterns. When something is out of the pattern, you react immediately. It happens all the time. Number goes down, we focus on it. There's pressure on people to do something. Eventually, the number goes up. I back off and go to another problem. Beware any number that looks too good to be true. It probably is. A man I know bought a door-making company that had been losing money. He came in, gave some pep talks to people, and set up a standard cost system. Then he sat back to see what happened. To his delight, his profits jumped $30,000 per month from one quarter to the next, or so his outside accountant told him. The guy didn't ask how this happened. He just took the accountant's word for it. At the end of the year, the auditors came in and discovered the company was short $90,000 of work in process inventory. The problem, it turned out, was that the wood came in 10-foot boards, while the doors were only 8-foot long. Each board had to be cut to the right size. The excess wood was scrap, but the man had neglected to take scrap into account when he set up a standard cost system, so the scrap wasn't written off. On paper, it looked as though there were extra wood lying around that could be used to make doors. In fact, there was a lot of scrap wood that wasn't of any use to the company. The moral? Don't accept any number until you understand where it comes from and you know it's real. The numbers used in business are not sent down from on high. You get them by counting real things and then by adding, subtracting, multiplying, and dividing. If you don't understand the number, keep asking questions. Key point, business always has problems. Numbers tell you where the problems are and how worried you should be. My own personal benchmark. I always wanted to get SRC to the point where we could sell the company tomorrow and everyone would walk away with at least $55,000, which was the median price of a home in Springfield in 1991. We'd have that kind of value and liquidity. That was my number, $55,000 per person. You need a number or the goal isn't real. Housing seemed like a good one because it consumes such a tremendous amount of disposable income. If your house is paid off, you can look to the future. You don't have to look back. You can have a whole new perspective on your life.